From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. Revenge is a dish best served cold, but when Julian Slowick, the renowned chef played by Ralph Fiennes in The Menu, decides to exact revenge on both his acolytes and critics, he turns up the heat in entirely unexpected ways. Seth Rees and Will Tracy are the screenwriters behind the new culinary satire. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, how are you?
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Before we dig in, so to speak, let's meet Chef Julian. Here's a clip of him introducing the diners to his restaurant.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Hawthorne. I'm Julian Slowick, and tonight it'll be our pleasure to feed you.
The curtain rises.
Over the next few hours, you will ingest fat, salt, sugar, protein, bacteria, fungi, various plants and animals, and at times entire ecosystems. But I have to beg of you one thing, it's just one. Do not eat. Taste, savor, relish. Consider every morsel that you place inside your mouth. Be mindful, but do not eat. Our menu is too precious for that.
So, what prompted the two of you to write a screenplay about class disparity based in a 12-person destination restaurant?
I think probably we weren't thinking necessarily about even the theme of class disparity at the outset. I think we just thought that that would be a very useful and effective way to structure a film like a tasting menu, so that we actually use title cards throughout the film for the courses, and you're kind of brought through the movie like a menu, course one, course two, all the way through to dessert. And it felt as though that would be a way to take a satirical precinct or location, this dining room, this sort of very contained space. And with each course, you can kind of ratchet up the tension and also kind of ratchet up the comic surprise, because each course is sort of reacting to the last course. And then quite naturally, I think, through the characters that we populated that room with, some of those themes of class and consumerism and art and privilege made their way in, because it's, you know, it's just a very high-priced room.
Obviously, the people who go to this restaurant, they would have to be rich. But I think what Will and I were very interested in is not so much tearing down the rich, but just sort of tearing down the concept of entitlement. And in our society, you know, the endless consumption of content. I think we, as a society, consume and consume and consume and consume, and we inhale and consume, and we don't really take the time to think about who is providing us the content that we're consuming. But then on the flip side, I think Will and I also wanted to sort of talk about the people who are providing that content, especially in terms of the chef, that this is his vocation. This is what he's chosen to do. So you're certainly going to ultimately serve people who are not going to appreciate your content as much as you would like them to appreciate that. But they all sort of feed into each other and need each other in this sort of symbiotic relationship that's ultimately unhealthy and is never ending.
Clearly, the two of you have been exposed to these types of multi-course, sometimes endless meals. Were there any in particular that you based the menu on?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think probably, I mean, we may maybe have not been to as many as you'd think, but I think a few experiences have been pretty memorable for us. There was a restaurant on a kind of an island that I went to when I was on my honeymoon in Norway with my wife, and there's a kind of a seafood restaurant on an island that you have to take a boat to. And so it made me feel quite claustrophobic to be stuck on an island in the middle of the ocean in Norway for 4 hours. And that just seemed like a good location for a story. But that restaurant was not of the kind of modernist exclusivity that you see in the film. for that type of restaurant, I think, you know, some obvious but still very vivid examples would be places like Alinea, Noma, El Bulli. But we also wanted to kind of take the modernist tasting menu experience, highly foraged, highly local, highly avant-garde food of those restaurants, and kind of find, not copy them so much, but kind of try to create our own unique culture within this restaurant and try to create a chef who didn't really feel like Adria or Akitz or Rene Redzepi, but really felt like a very specific and new creation.
You might think that Will and I think these places are, I want to say bull and then a swear word, but I won't do that. I can just say bull. You might think that Will and I think they're bull, but actually there's an element of it that could be, but we also very much, this is written from a place of love for these places also. I mean, it's for us a sort of balance of the magic, 50% magic of these places and 50% the bull of these places, because we have a deep amount of respect for all the chefs that Will just mentioned, and we do think they're geniuses. And, you know, especially in terms of Alinea, you know, Akitz says he's a storyteller, and actually he does do it quite well.
I don't want to give any spoilers, but I'm curious about the tortilla course. And I know that you collaborated with Dominique Crenn, who was the culinary consultant on the movie.
Yes.
But this idea of printing pointed illustrations on each tortilla that were extremely personal to the guest. I mean, just tell me a little bit about the conversation that the two of you had in coming up with that.
Well, that is actually based on a specific thing that I saw, not in person, but read about. There's actually a former Microsoft executive who left Microsoft to follow his new passion, which was highly modernist molecular cuisine. His name is Nathan Myhrvold, and he wrote this sort of Bible on what is called modernist food. And one of his techniques that he had pioneered was the ability to laser print images on food surfaces. So we just kind of took that idea of like, okay, if we have this ability to print something on a tortilla, what's on there? And also, how can we use that to reveal character? So
right.
Everything that's on those tortillas for every table that you're at reveals a little bit more about that table and the people who are eating at that table than we previously knew in the film. So it's kind of a sort of stealthy way of character exposition.
Right, in two ways, because it's exposition and, you know, the audience is getting exposition in terms of who the diners are, but they're also getting exposition in terms of how methodically and meticulously the chef has planned this evening.
One of the things that really struck me about this movie in general, I mean, you know, I've had this show called Good Food on an NPR station for more than 25 years, and I've watched as food has gone from a completely analog experience of ingestion with tradition bound into it and ritual that's attached to a lot of tradition to becoming entertainment. And how many of these, or not many, but some of these kinds of meals that the plot comes from are made up of rituals that can be completely hollow in the sense
yeah.
that they're just made up from the mind of the chef. So, I thought it was just extraordinary in that context that there's a moment where there's a big enough audience that a movie like this could be made. And I'm wondering who you see the audience as being.
Well, I mean, I think our aim was to write a movie that whether you've worked in a kitchen like that, or if you're someone who loves going to restaurants like that, or if you're the world's biggest skeptic of restaurants like that, that all of those people would be able to enjoy the movie equally, and all those people would be able to see someone in the film who they relate to in some way. As Seth said, I mean, yeah, we both, it's both kind of a love letter to that type of restaurant and also a poisoned love letter to that type of restaurant. And, you know, I've always liked this phrase, this French phrase that you never grow old at the dinner table. And certainly there are tasting menu experiences that are so long and punishing that you really can hear yourself growing older while you're sitting there. So it's somewhat of a takedown of that type of restaurant, while also recognizing that at their best, there is something truly transporting about that type of food that, with no shame, aspires to art. And who's to say that it isn't?
Do you think you'll need to start making reservations under pseudonyms at fine dining restaurants
no,
now?
No, and I'll answer this. Yeah. I can tell you exactly what's going to happen. Nicholas Holt or Ray Fiennes or anyone will walk into a restaurant and they'll be seated. No problem. Will and I will be like on our Resy app, hoping for notifications that like from and, like, then we're just going to like, I guess we'll do the table for two at 10:45 PM. Fine.
It's like we wrote the stupid thing so that we could get free food. And I don't think it's going to happen.
Ultimately, we are two very hungry individuals and we were just trying to write our way out of a problem and we failed.
Thank you so much. I mean, I've seen the movie twice and
great.
Thank you.
And I loved it.
Oh, that's Thank very you. Kind.
That's Seth Reese and Will Tracy, the screenwriters of Searchlight Pictures' The Menu. Both Ralph Fiennes and Anya Taylor-Joy were just nominated for Golden Globe Awards for Best Actor and Best Actress. Thankfully, the film is in wide release and easier to see than nabbing a reservation at Hawthorne. Coming up, Hanukkah starts tomorrow, and one of my next guests has an idea for celebrating the miracle of oil. Beignet, anyone? That's when Good Food continues.